Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Well, if anybody's there, we don't hear them.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll start over and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We have Dr. Tim Hayes who's covering for us. Thank you so much. And today is Tuesday, October the 7th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. And I don't think Michael's quite with us yet, so I'll chat until he gets there. Dr. Tim, yesterday we didn't even get around to saying hey to you. Everything just was so busy and just kept going. And so how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. I thoroughly enjoyed the intro and the show yesterday. And as always, if someone calls in with a question about the process, that's a top priority. So I thought it was an excellent show and glad Michael got to do some work with that person who called in. And hopefully she'll call back in and get some refinement, because if I remember correctly, near the end of the show, she still had some questions. So I'm doing well. I just had another breath session and had a huge energy movement release, so still kind of feeling a little shaky and quaky inside.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, breath sessions are phenomenal, that's for sure. Well, there was go ahead.
I was just going to say, just one of the many tools that you and Michael, help promote and teach people to improve their lives. So thank you for all you do in that area.
And absolutely. So do you have someone that breathes you when you do it, or you do it on your own?
Well, this is a higher brain living technique I'm learning, and there is somebody there who facilitates that.
There was a couple met when Michael's known them for a long time. They live in Oregon, and when we were in St. Louis, the gentleman used to be from St. Louis, so Michael thought of him as we were driving through St. Louis, and he called him, and they were there. But when we were in Oregon, they taught us that. They're both into that, too, and so we went through a session of that with them. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I prefer the simplicity and power of the still point breath work. I've learned a lot of different breathing techniques over the years and tried various ones, and my favorite is the still point. But they each have a little bit different offering, so.
Right. Well, along the lines of the conversations yesterday, one of the things that we were talking about in the chat room is when Michael was reading the thing about someone having the fear of the spiders, she came up with having a fear of infectious diseases. And what we got down to was that she had a Native American in her, as do I, and how many of the Native Americans died when the Europeans came over and spread the infectious diseases that the Native Americans didn't have the immune system to fend off. And so I said, you know, we probably both need to go back and do some worksheets around being a Native American and somebody bringing something that we didn't ask for or choose, and our system, than us having to live with the consequences of someone else's behavior. And I said, and then we can take that on and look in our life at how many other times in our life we've put ourselves in the situation where someone else does a behavior or brings something upon us that wasn't of our choosing, and we live with the consequences of it. And so that was kind of a big one for us in the chat room yesterday as well.
Yeah, but that would yield some very productive worksheets.
Yes. You're very faint. Just barely can hear you, babe.
I might be going through a bad spell area.
Oh, I thought that was Michael that came back with that comment. You wonder why I call you babe.
I was so faint, I didn't hear the babe part, but...
How funny. Well, Michael, are you with us yet? I guess not. Not sure what he's doing.
So are you guys doing some downtime?
Yes, we've actually, we're just here at Higgins Lake, and I've gone twice with Sally to do yoga, so definitely getting some time doing something different than what we normally do.
Wonderful.
So I am here.
So,
I was just slightly mute challenged. Am I coming through all right, Jeannie?
Yes,
there you are.
Here I am, yes. And, of course, we're delighted and honored that everybody who chooses to join us. And we're here to bring forward the truth of how things happen in our world, how things come forward. And, Jeannie, there's another level that I think we need to be able to look at, of that idea that someone brings something upon us that we have no part in. And my offering is that that's impossible in an energy system where everything works by law, and that anything that we end up dealing with, there's a part that we play in the process. And, you know, to me, the whole idea of forgiveness, if you look at the ancient Aramaic, when they said, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life, is that if one is unwilling to look at the part they play in whatever comes, then whatever comes will seem to be independent and not of their own making. And the truth is that energetically something can't come into our field that we don't have a part in. And as we're willing, and that's to me with the power of forgiveness, as we're willing to forgive, that forgiveness process, that taking of responsibility, allows us to see the part of ourselves that we need to look at and work through in order to give up the innocent victim status. Because in truth, there are no victims, they're only volunteers. And as we become more conscious and are willing to look at, you know, what's the energy I've engaged in? What's the part of my heart that allows this seemingly, you know, totally unwarranted thing to come into my space? And my offering is that's an impossibility. And as I keep looking and cleaning up the subtler and subtler and subtler parts of my mind, then I find those parts of me. And as I find those parts of me, then I'm able to clean those parts of me up. And if you look at, you know, I mean, there's been such horrendous abuses in the world, and if you look into the root of where the abuse happened, there's always another level, another level, another level of cause to be looked at. And when we start to look at those levels of cause, oftentimes they're generational. Oftentimes they are so remote from our awareness that it really takes some work to tap into what's the part of me playing into this and what part do I need to clean up in order to change this. And so go ahead.
I was just going to say, I totally agree. I believe what I said was that we didn't choose. I totally agree we have a part in it, especially the genetic things. I was referencing like the Indians. I don't think you were on the phone yet when we were talking about that, the Native Americans. Yeah. And when the Europeans came over and brought the disease, that wasn't of their choosing. Yes, they had a part in it, and there was some energetic thing that, but it wasn't of their choosing necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, and oftentimes when we choose something, we choose not in the arena that it shows up, but we choose some sort of behavior that produces a result, but it's still a connected result. And so my input is just that we keep looking at what's the part of me, what's the part of me, what's the part of me. Otherwise, I can develop a belief system based in denial, and the denial game would be, well, I didn't have anything to do with this. And always, everything that comes into my space, I have something to do with, and it's kind of the good news and the bad news. The good news being that, now that I know that there's a part of me involved, I can access and clean up that part of me so that I can change the effect. And as I do clean that part of me up, then things shift and change around me. So that's the good news. The bad news is it always comes back to me, and then it comes back to me again. And, you know, if I'm looking at a situation or a circumstance and I'm in rage or guilt or grief or fear, you know, it's my guilt or grief or rage or fear, whatever it is that that comes forward. And so to keep cleaning it up, cleaning it up, cleaning it up is a big challenge. And go ahead.
In the chat room, the question is asked then, they get it that they have to clean up their fear around what comes up for them around infectious diseases, but how did the natives invite that infectious disease to come into their energy systems?
Well, not having been there that I'm aware of, I don't know what kind of choices would have been involved, but for instance, in cases where people have abused others, and, you know, in the Native American world, before the Westerner arrived, and I agree that the Westerner cranked things up on a whole other level of insanity. It's just bizarre. But the Native American world was not innocent of abuse and slaughter and slavery, in fact, with other tribes and such. And so if I reach out in an abusive way to another, then I set up a field to draw abuse to myself. And so precisely where historically each mind engaged, I don't know, but there was a fair bit of that. You know, you look at the African continent and the whole idea of slavery from there. And, you know, long before the slavers who brought people from Africa to America showed up in Africa, there were people on that continent selling each other as slaves, capturing and selling each other off in slavery. I mean, it was going on a long time before the Westerner arrived. They just kind of refined it to an art. And I was just reading some work the other day about the number of Irish who were literally sold in slavery in America, which is almost never talked about or never addressed. And, you know, where the slavery becomes the excuse for all kinds of things and reparations. Well, in fact, the Irish that were sold into slavery just, you know, straight out on the slave market, it's, you know, how crazy is all this stuff? And what's in the roots of our own energy fields that we need to keep cleaning up in order to change this whole game and bring it into a world of responsibility and fairness. And one of the Beatitudes speaks of having a neural structure active in your mind. This goes back 2,000 years, but they're inviting people to have neural structure that underlies just and fair behavior active within one's own mind, and that that was an important part of the work. And so it all energetically ties together.
Okay, gotcha. 646-200-4169. Press 1, and you'll be first in line. There's no one with their hand up right now.
Well, yesterday we talked about, you know, what a human personal code, a truly human personal code would look like. And I shared with everyone the My Commitment piece from our website, which anybody who wants to go and download it is welcome to. And it gives a general, here's the attitude of mind, here's the way that I choose to live as a human being in order to support me living in my real humanness. And you know, in our world, this excuse of, after all, I'm only human, is really a fraud and a false excuse. If you were only human, you'd have never done any of the things that you try to excuse yourself for by saying, I'm only human, because that human life is just filled with light and power and love, and just hold a newborn child and you know everything that human life is. So we offer the commitment as a personal code, as a way to start to build a personal code that will truly support each of us living in that active presence of love. And then to come down to some of the specifics, you know, we gave some specifics about what kind of genetic anomalies might be within the structure that would call us into behavior. I used the example of the research done with the rats and the cherry blossoms, and that the future generations would automatically shy away. And, you know, if we could put ourselves into the rat's mind as it runs away from a cherry blossom, I think it would be safe to assume that the rat is saying to itself, cherry blossoms are dangerous, I have to get out of here. And of course, there's nothing dangerous about a cherry blossom, but if some non-human researcher has, and when I say that, I say that very specifically, someone without the active presence of love would inflict torture upon a rat in order to make it fearful of a cherry blossom, then that future generation having that genetic anomaly, what feels right to the rat is to run away, is to escape. And I use the example of, you know, let's imagine that cherries are the only thing that will fully nourish a rat and keep it totally healthy. So now we just put something into the rat to cause repulsion to that which would keep it healthy. And that's precisely what's happened in the human realm. And so we gave some specific examples of what those genetic calls and those genetic feelings might look like that would put people into unsane behavior within their relationships, within their family systems, and within their world. And so I had the thought that today we might do some specifics, aside from the commitment, of what might a true human response look like to a challenge situation. And so let's say there's a situation where one goes into anger with a family member, and the family member, in willingness to do their work, finds themselves in terror and fear. So the non-human response would be, oh, look, you're terrorizing me and causing me to be afraid, which is denial, which will cause me to dissociate from the part of my mind that holds my fear and terror, and therefore I can't heal my fear and terror. A true human response would look like, gee, you know, when that anger comes up, when you express that anger the way you did, when you go into that rage, that really brings terror up in me. And what I'm ready to do is I'm ready to hold and heal my terror. I'm ready to move through this and really, truly heal. And so a true human response would look more like that than look at how you're terrorizing me. The family member who finds themselves in isolation and that genetic call, you know, perhaps someone back in the family history when they were in a painful situation within the family, isolated themselves and found that that seemed to help them to ameliorate their fears and their sadness, their grief, whatever their pain was, then the non-human response is, well, you just said something, you know, untoward and toward me, and so now I'm going to isolate myself, would be the non-human response. The human response would look like, you know, when you said that, it sounded like that was, you know, for me, that was a degrading comment pointed toward me. And when I hear a degrading comment toward myself, what I realize is that I want to withdraw and isolate myself. That's, that seems to be what feels right to me. And I realize that withdrawing and isolating myself is, does not support me being in this awesome active presence of love that I'm designed to be. It does not support me living as love. So what I'm ready and willing to do is to bring forward this, the thoughts that are beneath. I'm willing to develop the skill to tap into the genetic call to isolate myself, bring that forward in the presence of love, heal that, and step forward instead. I'm going to step forward as this awesome active presence of love, and instead of pushing you away because I perceive you as my attacker, I'm going to choose to reach out through my isolation feelings and bring forward this presence of love that I am and bring it into the space with you. And so that would be more what a human response might look like. The child that is, you know, in trauma, and the parent who goes into terror, the parent, in order to really facilitate the child that's in trauma, is going to have to be willing to embrace their terror. And so when a parent sees a child hurting and goes into their own terror, the first order of business as a human would be for the adult to recognize, gee, when I see my child in trauma, I just go into terror, and what I want to do, what I'm willing to do, is I'm willing to forgive and to heal my terror and my own trauma so that I can be a space of love to support this my child in whatever it is they need to deal with here. I'm willing to learn skills, not of isolating and traumatizing myself and others, but I'm willing to learn skills of healing and support. And as I am willing to heal those things, then coming forward through my own shell of pain, I can support the child in seeing that there is modeling, there is a way to change the internal dynamic, and there is a way to be empowered so I can draw my child through their own trauma, and as they come through their trauma, full-blown active presence of love, we join, we connect, and we reinforce each other. And in doing so, we remove these genetic anomalies of hostility and fear that have been locked perhaps for generations within our genes and come forward into the world in a whole new way. And so that's what we're looking to support, is that true expression of human life. And so as we move into that expression, we know that there's work to be done, and the work is not always easy. The work is a process, and that process is one of continuously in a state of willingness, whatever comes up from our past, to bring forward this presence of love, this presence of compassion, this presence of choice and intuition and will and all of the things that come with our human lives and bring it into expression. You have any thoughts in that direction, Dr. Tim?
On? Hello?
You are on.
All right. I have two thoughts. One is, when we're talking about the Native Americans being impacted by the diseases brought by the Europeans and all of the horrors that happened there, it made me think of, or it resonated for me, the idea of the man who worked with baboons for 30 years and he was watching their stress responses, and there was this hierarchy of abuse in the baboons, the alpha male on down, and as he studied this group, he witnessed something happen where the baboons got to a dump and ate meat that was tainted with, I think it was tuberculosis or something. And all of the aggressive, mean baboons died off because they lived in such stress that their immune systems were compromised. And so perhaps a similar kind of thing happened with native cultures, not just in America, but around the globe, where other cultures come in and they're carrying diseases that aren't, their immune systems aren't up to. And so that's a way in which it can happen that it's not, you know, if I live in anger and fear, we know we've got hard scientific data that says it compromises my immune system, even in individual episodes of anger. So, of course, if I have it genetically or through the ancestry. The other thing I wanted to mention was on Sunday I watched the movie Stand With Me, which is a movie about both sides of what Michael was just talking about. One of them is slavery across the globe, and the other one is standing in the presence of love in acknowledgement of, or at the same time that you come into contact with, the idea that there's slavery. And the story is, this is a documentary that was done about an 8 or 9 year old girl who found out about child slavery, and she said, I want to eliminate child slavery. And she decided to set up a lemonade stand, and her parents supported her, and they ended up having the lemonade stand for 365 days. Rain or shine, they did this lemonade stand. And they started out, and they were charging $2 for a little cup of lemonade, and they weren't selling very many. And so the little girl had the idea, why don't we give it away and just put a sign out there and tell people, it's free lemonade. We're trying to end child slavery. Pay whatever you want. And they had people paying $20 and $120 and multiples of $100 for a cup of lemonade, and it just grew into a movement, which is still moving. And it's a loving response. And her thing is, she wants to be able to help these children play. So rather than getting mired in the tragedy and the sadness, she turned her loving, childlike energy on it and came up with a loving solution. So that would be my offering. That movie, and you can look for it under, you'd have to Google it because it hasn't been released on DVD yet, but it's Stand With Me movie.
Awesome. I have seen some previews for that too.
Yeah, I actually went looking for it last week when I saw that Jacob was doing it there at the church. And it's something that you can stream on your own computer at home. I'll look as we're speaking. I think I have the website for it. But pretty incredible story about someone who's doing something from the perspective of a loving response rather than the destructive, you know, let's go destroy type response. And, you know, if we could just shift and get enough people who would go to a constructive, loving space, realizing who they are and bringing that forward in the world. The other thing that that I think was really interesting, Tim, in that video, and the video that you're talking about with the baboons is called Portrait of a Killer, is that he had worked with this troop of baboons for a couple of decades. And he actually, in the film, says, you know, I didn't like these creatures. They were nasty to each other. He just, like, you know, he had grown to a relationship with them, so had a love for them of sorts, but didn't particularly like them. But after this event happened where the whole troop got into this tuberculosis-tainted meat, and he just thought it was a tragedy because it was going to kill them all. He thought it was rather interesting that the only ones who died were the vicious ones. And then a whole new thing that had never been seen before in the baboon world, he was able to observe, and that was that there was now a troop of baboons who, there was no viciousness among them. You know, the males did not abuse the children, nor the females. Then, you know, they towed the mark. They were caring and concerned and loving with each other rather than abusive with each other. And he makes the point that, you know, a baboon from another troop would wander in who was one of these vicious ones. And he said it would take them about 6 months to retrain that baboon that, no, we don't beat up and act viciously toward the females or toward the young ones. We care for them. We nurture them. And there was a whole new thing that they were able to see as the vicious were wiped out by their own viciousness, ostensibly by tuberculosis, but obviously not by tuberculosis, or they'd have all been dead. So it's just pretty powerful to see when we look from a point of view of energetic dynamics, just
well,
how
one
the whole
thing,
game can change. Yes.
One more thing I want to get in about that movie, Stand With Me. They ended up raising their goal of $150,000 or whatever it was so they could free not just the two little boys they saw in a picture, but their entire family. But then they started looking at how do we end slavery, and it's a very complex system. There's slavery all across the globe right now today as I'm talking to you. And what they discovered was there are some organizations that have really studied this and are doing phenomenal work to try to unravel the very complicated system that allows slavery. And the key thing that everybody listening to this can do, you don't have to start your own lemonade stand, you don't have to raise $1 million like they've done, can simply decide to pay attention to what you buy, where your goods come from. If you buy fair trade, you are helping to end slavery. If you pay a little bit more for your clothes and a little bit more for your coffee and a little bit more for your fruit or whatever it is that comes from these countries where they use slave labor, and if it's labeled fair trade, that's a positive thing you can do along with anything else you feel moved to do.
Absolutely. And you look at, you know, Sierra Leone, for instance, is one particular example. Most of the chocolate that's consumed in America comes from Sierra Leone, and much of that chocolate is harvested and processed by child slave labor. And so that's definitely one arena, if one goes to fair trade chocolate, that can really make a big difference. And of course, when you add that there's Ebola in Sierra Leone too, you might want to really be careful of where your chocolate comes from. So, and he just texted me and said that Michael is with us. Let's say hello, Michael.
Michael, if you're still on there, if you would press 1 again, he disappeared off the switchboard.
Oh, we lost him. I assume Michael's number is 561. Michael, you're... Okay,
he must have dropped off. Okay.
We'll watch and see if he makes it back. So tell us more about that film, Tim. I would love to hear a little more about it. Are you still with us, Tim?
He is still with us and he's on. I don't know.
Have we lost you, Dr. Tim?
Maybe he stepped away because he is still on there. We do have another hand up. It's 417 number. You're on the air.
Hi, everybody. This is Magda from Missouri.
Hey, young lady, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was listening yesterday when you read my commitment, and I noticed a change. and that is that you changed the word I open my heart to I open my being, I think. Can you explain why you made that change?
Sure, actually, Jeannie can explain it.
Oh, good. Okay.
I think he made the change because of a sensation or whatever that I had. And it started the first time we were down in Costa Rica. I went through a healing crisis. And I wasn't sure if it was my bronchial tubes or if it was my heart. But the center of my chest felt like an elephant was standing on it. I mean, it was to the point of I was ready to go to the hospital. And after that experience, to me, you know, because we could talk about our words and that our words tell the world what we want. And so to me, I would say I open my heart, then that really don't have a desire to open my chest. So I changed it. I was not comfortable with saying I open my heart after that. And so I would say I open my being. And after doing that for quite a while, then Michael changed it and he started saying it.
Okay. I remember you telling me about that incident. Yeah. Okay. So you don't want to have open heart surgery triggered when you say that. I get it. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. That was, I was a little curious about that, and I think I'd forgotten about your incident in Costa Rica. So thank you for the explanation.
You're welcome.
That was all I had, except to say, Michael, and fantastic intro yesterday. Really, really fantastic.
And I think Michael's back with us now.
Good.
Hello?
Well, welcome, Michael. I will I'll unmute. Okay.
And Magda, the intro yesterday, you heard me speak in the intensives about the blessing that I get of being able to engage with so many people's questions. And that whole thing came out as an answer to someone's question that I'd been processing with a couple of days earlier. And so it is one of the blessings that I get. And that's why we invite anyone and everyone to take the work and teach it, because as we engage in other people's refined questioning processes, we get to get the right question. And when the right question comes, Luca will give you the answer. And that was all a product of that yesterday, and I thought it came together pretty awesomely.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you're so right. When we teach it, we get so many chances to learn and go deeper ourselves.
Yeah.
It was great. I'm glad you had that experience. So I'm going to go on mute so that you can talk with Michael and I can listen. Okay.
Hey there, good sir. It's awesome to see those pictures of you on the in the gym on Facebook and moving in your life. How do you be, sir?
I'm good. It's a little different out here in the real world trying to do this stuff and try to find the time to do it all. But I'm working on it, and still feeling good. I went to the VA yesterday, and they wanted to put me into a certain program where they do a psychology on me, and then they do physical therapy on me, and then they give me more manage my pain medicine. And I didn't get approved for the program because I already do too much. I'm too well, they said. I'm too aware. I'm too well. I'm not taking the medicine. I don't need the psychology, and the physical therapy can't help me because I'm already aware of what I need to do. So that was pretty good news to deal with. And I still have bad days off and on with the pain. But I'm doing good, you know. And a couple days ago, I had gone through a grumpy stage where stuff was up in my face. I wasn't really sure what was going on, so I took some time out and broke out my Laws of Living book and did some worksheets and did some, what's the word, linkage ones, and did some goal canceling. So it's good. This is historically a rough time for me emotionally, but I'm good. I'm dealing with it in a whole different manner, and you know, I still get some good lessons from the time spent at the Heartland, and it's good. Things are going really, really good. I'm pretty happy. And when then once I did some Laws of Living and did some reading and tracked down, you know, some of the old stuff that I was doing, my ship seemed to get righted. I wasn't leading too much. I was back up on the keel and making my way. So it was good. We're doing really good. How are you guys doing?
Well, I would support you, you know, keeping that Laws of Living book open and on the desk. And, you know, even if it's just a minute here, 2 minutes there, to keep those brain cells firing and keep that building and just sail right through it all. And especially with the Holy Day season coming up, to just stay in that even, connected space is, you know, I don't know if you listened to the show yesterday. If not, you might want to go back and look in the archives and give a listen to it, because we talked about,
okay,
you know, the genetic propensities that come, and, you know, to have one person in the family with that awareness, and that's pretty powerful. That the VA says, well, you're too aware, and, you know, you're too healthy now, and, you know, a few months ago, well, there's not really much of anything we can do for you. That's a pretty awesome shift, and what a gift.
They're very uneasy. They're very uneasy when they talk to me, because I blow away everything that's supposed to happen. I'm supposed to want more drugs. I'm supposed to give up on my life, and I'm supposed to just do and take what they tell me and go into this little envelope or groove. And so when I tell them that I don't want their drugs, and I'm part of them, there's especially the young guys, because there's a lot of residents that work at the VA, and the younger guys or gals who are in there, they seem to be a little more excited about the fact that, no, I don't want this. Yes, I'm doing okay. How do I get past the – I breathe through the real bad pain. So some of the younger people are like, oh, well, that's pretty cool. But the other guys, they're like, they don't know what to do with me. I'm such an oddity that I don't fit in their brain cells. So it's almost like, wow, that's fantastic, but I can't say that's fantastic, and now I have no idea what to do with you. So it's I went through some really strange thing. I didn't know what to do with it, so I'm working on it. I found out that the mother of my children has cancer. She has cancer, and stage one. And they're doing chemo and removing it and doing all the stuff that traditional medicine does. And I tried to offer some advice, some natural stuff. And I told my oldest daughter, and she laughed at me. I reached out to my youngest daughter, and she didn't reach back. Then I reached out to her husband, and we talked. And I was just held a space for him, because he was dealing with her bedside manner, which I know is difficult. But what really shocked me is that my oldest is getting ready to get married, and she has an amazing event coming in her life. And the hatred that came out of her was so breathtaking. I mean, literally, it robbed me of my breath for a moment when I first heard it. And to see this and not to understand it, but to be able to try to help, and you would think that if there's any person on the planet that would you know, like to hear my daughter talk bad about their mother, it would have been me. But I was in shock. I mean, this was just vile, and it disturbed me. I think that what set me into my tailspin was, you know, since this is going on with her mother. And I believe that, you know, being energetic beings, there's a lot of hate with my ex-wife. She hates herself. She hates everything around her. And there's a lot of fear there. I mean, there's a lot of insecurity. And so it's a rough life. And I feel bad for her, and I wish that she could find happiness. But what I'm afraid of is, you know, I'm watching my eldest do the exact same things as her mother, and trying to convey to her that if she doesn't let go of this hate, that it's going to internalize in her as well. And nobody wants to hear that. They think I'm an idiot or some tree-hugging hippie person. So all I can do is hold a space, and, you know, there's some dread going there because now there's more and more drama than I initially expected going up in the wedding in a couple weeks. So I'm trying to take care of my side of the street, you know, try to fortify my peace and my connection to my source. And the old things came up. You know, I really switched into the old brain cells for a while there, and I had to intentionally go back and reconnect. And it had to be – it wasn't very comfortable reconnecting as it was while I was in Heartland. It was forced at first, you know. I had to force it.
I hear you.
But once I did, I could see the energetic shift within me. Well, will that shift anywhere else? I don't know. All I can do is do what's right within the boundaries of my energetic pattern. And we'll see what happens. But personally, I'm just amazed.
Well, and Michael, I acknowledge you for the fact that, you know, I've been privy to several conversations you've had after all that you went through with your former wife, and here the conception of love and support that you've got for her now after all that trauma is monumental and just speaks of the work that you've done. And remember that for your oldest daughter, it didn't take 2 weeks for her to get here of listening to the power person dynamic of her mother with all that language.
Mm-hmm.
And such. It took her whole life. And
right.
It's going to take time for her to be able to undo it. And the biggest gift you can give is keep doing your work and just modeling that it can be different. And when that modeling gets to the point where the brain cells hit critical mass and she goes, oh, I could be like Dad and switch my conversation here, then she'll switch. But until then, she can only function out of the brain cells that she's got.
Yeah, that was a big struggle, I'll be honest with you, because, you know, I've been reaching out to both of them. I mean, I sent Margaret and I sent her 2 dozen roses and a nice little card. No one's acknowledged that, but that's not why I sent it. And then, you know, there's part of me that was like, okay, I'm done trying to reach out to my kids because they're not talking to me again. And I was like, listen, you know, I want to reach out to them because that's what I want to do. And I want to reach out to them so that they can understand that you can reach out even when you don't feel right. You know, I reached out to them. And I told them, I told both of them, hey, if you need a I even told Richard, that's my ex-wife's husband, that if you need a shoulder to talk to, that I'd be here for him. And that's all you can do, whether people choose to do that. And the old me came up, my own brain cells came up and said, screw this, I'm not doing that. This is, I'm too vulnerable, I look stupid, nobody cares. And so I wanted to shut it down. And then the other day, after doing the work and thinking and asking Ruka to show me some stuff at night, I said, listen, if I want any change from them, then I can't shut down love from me every time I feel hurt. That's not an example. A genetic energetic pattern by going back to the old genetics. I just won't. I'm just going to keep that bottleneck going. So it was a little easier for me to get past that because that vulnerability with me is my biggest issue. It's really tough to get over that. But once I did it, I felt much better. I didn't get any response, but that I didn't expect a response, to be honest with you. But I just wanted to, like you said, be an example that you can love no matter what without reason, without trade, without bargaining. And if they ever get that, fantastic. And if they don't, hey, there's nothing I can do one way or the other. All I can do is try. And that's pretty cool. And I would
You'll have benefited by doing it.
Yes.
Whether they ever get it, you have benefited.
And that is true. I feel much better since I had done the reaching out thing. Yeah. And there's stuff
and
to work.
Listen to yesterday's show. Yesterday's show, I mean, this was, it's like, this is the whole conversation we had yesterday, the first 45 minutes of the show.
Really, and I have no idea what the show is about because I didn't listen to it. So that's pretty funny.
Yeah. Give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. There's a quote. Actually, I've been doing a little bit of writing, and I came across a quote from a marketing executive named Jack Trout, and he writes in a book, The Battle for the Mind. And he says, here's one of the challenges for your daughters to be able to hear you. And here's what this marketing executive who's writing about the battle for the mind, and he says, when you use a recognized authority to give your product or service credibility, you're tapping into a fundamental aspect of human nature. There's security in not having to trust your own judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the medical authority holds themselves up and takes advantage of that. He then quotes from, remember the candid camera show, Alan Funt?
Yeah.
And he quotes Alan Funt, and here's what Alan Funt says. He says, the worst thing, and I see it over and over, is how easily people can be led by one kind of authority or even by minimal signs of authority. And then he goes on to, just 1 second here, my computer skipped. He goes on to say, we put up a sign on the road, Delaware closed today, reported Mr. Funt. And he said, motorists didn't question it. Instead, they asked, is Jersey open? Literally, all they did was put a sign up on the road and a few, you know, I guess roadblocks and told people Delaware was closed, and people go, oh, well, the authority says it's so, then it must be so.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
it's true.
And so, yeah. So he goes on to, as the general semantics has been saying for decades, words don't contain meanings. The meanings are not in the words. They're in the people using the words. Like a sugar bowl, which is empty until someone fills it with sugar, a word has no meaning until someone fills it with meaning. And, of course, the meanings that have filled most people's minds come from that insane, or he calls it unsane, hostility and fear-based mind. And until we take control and take charge and choose to train it, change it, then, you know, the game gets pretty crazy. And he quotes from the guy who developed the concept of general semantics. And what he says is, insane people try to make the world of reality fit what is in their heads. The sane person constantly analyzes the world of reality and then changes what's inside his or her head to fit the facts. He says that's an awful lot of trouble for most people. Besides, how many people want to constantly change their opinion to fit the facts? It's a whole lot easier to change the facts to fit your opinions. Unsane people, he says, make up their minds and then find facts to verify their opinions. Or even more commonly, they accept the opinion of the nearest expert, and then they don't have to bother with the facts at all. And that's where most people live, and you're opening up a whole new world as you challenge and surround you with new ways of understanding, and it will just strengthen the energetic impact of all of that in your physiology as well as, you know, everyone around you. And it takes time to build the brain cells. You know, you've heard me use the example before of the ounce of gold on the plate on the floor and the pound of hamburger. The dog has a choice, but we know that every dog in the world that walks into the room is going to chow down on the pound of hamburger.
And that's true.
How much work is it going to take to get the dog to build the brain cells for, oh, if I ignore the hamburger and take the ounce of gold, I can go out and buy 1,500 pounds of hamburger. Until the dog has those brain cells, it's never going to touch the ounce of gold. Until the person you're talking to who's been brought up in hostility and fear has the brain cells for, oh, I could choose love and function as a loving being here rather than out of my old brain cells. You know, until those new brain cells are strong enough, it's just not possible to be done. And it takes time to do it. So keep sowing the seeds, and you'll see the fruit of your labor.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've seen you speak numerous times. I've been with you numerous times. I've done the work. I've taught the work. And I have a hard time with it at times. So if I've been exposed to all this, and messed with it and argued with it and everything until I've put it to the fire and tested it and found that certain aspects are true and then made that my truth, that followed along with the eternal forces of truth. I mean, if I look at them and say, okay, this is me at their age without any of this, it's easy to see why it's hard to swallow. Absolutely. 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 And that helps me with my understanding and patience with the situation. It really does. And that's new, too. Me and patience, we're not really good friends.
Well, it's a good friend to have.
Yeah, I'm working on that one. Well, I just want to tell you guys I love you. I love your listeners. I miss a bunch of you. And hope to see you soon.
Okay. We will see
and
you
Michael?
And probably will be. Yes.
Michael Coughlin?
Yes, sister.
Hey, Angela's in the chat room, and she said, yay for you that you are amazing.
Aw, thank you, love. Thank you. You guys are amazing, too.
Smoke a beer.
All right, guys, I'll let you go. I love you.
Okay, blessings. How awesome is that? And for those
he's come
who
so far.
May not, well, for those who may not know who Michael is, if you check on our Facebook page, you'll see some pictures of Michael in the gym. And it's been, if I remember correctly, 10 years since he's been able to go into the gym because of his physical challenges. And when he arrived at Heartland this summer, he was in a wheelchair. And along about his sixth week there, he was jogging up the hill. So, you know, and now he's back in the gym after 10 years absence, rebuilding his body and getting ready to go to his daughter's wedding and, you know, getting back in shape as a Marine to you know, have that hard body look again. Pretty cool. It's pretty awesome to watch. And so let's see. We're down to the last 3 minutes. So I'm going to just kind of put in a thought or two, and that is that we are going to be in Grand Rapids, Michigan on Friday, pardon me, on Saturday at the Coptic Center. You can go to our website, www.whyn.org, and noting at the Coptic Center at the Spiritual Unity of Nations Conference. So you can come and join us on Saturday. And then on Sunday morning, we'll be doing the service at Unity, and Sunday afternoon, a free Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, free series of workshops. And then Saturday, there is one workshop when we travel that we do charge a fee for. It's an all-day, very deep process-oriented workshop, and we'll be doing that on Saturday. And so all things moving forward, and come and join us. The next week, we'll start, actually, on Sunday morning, we'll be at Unity, Renaissance Unity, in Lansing, Michigan, and we'll be doing a full week of workshops there, and then we'll be into intensive time before we know it, October 31st, 9-day codependence to interdependence intensive. So we'll look forward to seeing everybody who chooses to join us, and we appreciate the fact that you are here creating the space of support for bringing a new way of thinking into the world. And there'll come a point where the world that is so scornful of thinking as love in the presence of stress will start to get to put forward how obvious it is that that's the only way to do it, and that's what we're creating. It's a space for everyone to recognize that and to bring it forward. In the meantime, we invite you to bring somebody to the show with you tomorrow. Share a worksheet with somebody. Walk somebody through that forgiveness process. It's awesome to give that away to someone. And bring a stranger to the show as we join you in creating the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and we appreciate you for giving it. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.